And welcome back to the second half of Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis, and there's more important information coming up, so please keep that pencil and recycled paper handy. And now we're going to get right on into our commentary for today. Our commentary for today is from Oak. And Oak sends in commentaries from Western Massachusetts. And tonight's commentary is entitled...
Pigs in Space. How far have we come in the past 200 years? Many of us look back in horror at the sins of our predecessors here in the United States of America, those who displaced or dispatched tens of millions of native people from this land in the name of manifest destiny. No president has ever apologized, much less made real reparations for this genocide. No treaty ever drawn between the native inhabitants and the U.S. government was ever fully honored by Washington. And as if to erase history, few public school curriculums ever gave these issues a proper hearing. Such is some of the worst soiled laundry of the most powerful nation on earth. Yet the arrogance that prompted such immorality, such evil, lives on. It lives on in the seats of power as it does in the depths of many psyches. In the past, the adherents of manifest destiny violated and drove off the people of this land. Today, they assault the very land itself. The spokesmen of yesterday who advocated for white supremacy and the denial of equal rights to their fellow men and women are the far-right zealots of today who promote the mindless exploitation of our forests, waters, life forms, the very air we breathe. Their endless justifications for unsustainable exploitation ring as hollow as those of their racist predecessors. Indeed, much of their racism lives on. They foul the nest, and thus they assault all of us in the process. The latest mind-boggling environmental policy proclamations by the Bush administration lend further proof to this destructive, nay, suicidal, mindset. Being the product of big oil, we should not be surprised that George W. Bush will do all within his power to promote the wishes of his masters, reversing policy meant to protect public health with regard to arsenic levels in drinking water or CO2 emissions into the atmosphere. Bush proves to be more of an old King Cole than a president select. Yet, selected he was, and those who did the selecting are no different than those who view our planet as a commodity rather than the source of our existence, our very sustenance. As old King Cole's reign begins taking hold, we learn that it may be the most conservative administration in decades. That's not conservative as in conservation. It's conservative as in dominion ideology. Bush's various appointments and the mentality of those individuals belie the worst. Trash Earth first, do the other planets later. A while back, we learned that an addition to the euphemistically named International Space Station is a science lab called Destiny. Not satisfied with the near destruction of most species and much of their land on planet Earth, the spawn of manifest destiny adherents now look skyward. Oh, that they might remove themselves from this planet without too much collateral damage and rise heavenward to that place so many of them value far more than the earth which sustains them. If only they could do it instantly and leave the rest of us and the planet in peace. At least that's how this Oak sees it for Earth First Radio.
And we thank Oak for his commentary. Keep 'em coming, Oak. Now let's get into some concert announcements. If you're looking for the Casey Neal Trio, on October 16th, they'll be in Boise, Idaho at Tom Greeny's. Don't have an address or a time for that show, but once again, Boise, Idaho on October 16th at Tom Greeny's. October 18th in Bellingham, Washington at the Wild Buffalo. Again, I don't have an address or a time for that one, but if you're in Bellingham, you could probably find the Wild Buffalo on October 18th, and Casey Neal will be there. October 21st in Seattle, Washington, you can find Casey Neal at the Tractor Tavern with Johnny B. Connolly and Aidan Brennan. And they might have more information at www.tractortavern.com. That's October 21st in Seattle, Washington. And I play a lot of Walkin' Jim Stoltz. And Walkin' Jim is a great musician and also has a killer award-winning multimedia slideshow with poetry and stories, all kinds of stuff, happening October 15th in the Nashua, New Hampshire schools. October 18th, he'll be at Mercer Elementary in Mercer, Pennsylvania. October 18th in Slippery Rock, Pennsylvania at Slippery Rock University. October 9th, he'll be in Danville, Pennsylvania with a Forever Wild show at 7 p.m. at the PPL Montour Preserve Environmental Education Center. October 20th, he'll be in Tenafly, New Jersey with another Forever Wild show at 7:30 at the Presbyterian Church. If you want more information, call the Tenafly Nature Center. On October 21st, Walkin' Jim will be at the Inglewood, New Jersey. He'll have a kids' concert at 2:30 at the Flat Rock Brook Nature Center. Check out Walkin' Jim. It's some great stuff. Walkin' Jim has just completed 25,000 miles of wilderness walking. This summer, Walkin' Jim passed the 25,000-mile mark in his 28-year long-distance hiking career. This year's trek with his friend John Nangle led him from Mount Robson all the way up to Peace River in Alaska, another leg of his Yellowstone to Yukon journey, which he started in 1997. If you want more information, visit www.walkinjim.com. There's no G in that. There's just a J. All right. That's what we got for concert announcements. What do you got over here, Blackbird?
Okay. I've got three stories from Arizona, and most of it's good news. Some news of some concern. But we'll start with a mixed message on the pygmy owl, and this comes from the Center for Biological Diversity. They report that the pygmy owl holds on to listing protection but loses critical habitat. A federal judge has removed pygmy owl critical habitat designation of over 730,000 acres in southern Arizona, but upheld its listing as a federally endangered species. U.S. District Court Judge Susan R. Bolton ruled that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service failed to adequately study possible economic impacts when the agency designated critical habitat for the Cactus ferruginous pygmy owl in 1999. The ruling stems from a suit filed by the Southern Arizona Home Builders Association, the National Association of Home Builders, and the Home Builders Association of Southern Arizona last year. The developers failed in their effort to get a ruling removing the Cactus ferruginous pygmy owl from federal listing as endangered in Arizona. The judge ruled that the federal agency could limit owl population counts to those in Arizona. Developers' attorneys argued unsuccessfully that the owl population in northern Mexico also should be included in counts determining whether the pygmy owl is actually an endangered species. So it sounds like they're keeping their protection but not protecting the habitat. So
well, if you don't have a habitat, where are you going to live, you know? Yeah. Have to have a habitat.
These, I mean, their name says it. They're the Cactus ferruginous pygmy owls. They live in cactus. If you want more information on that, get in touch with the Center for Biological Diversity and... Their website is www.biologicaldiversity.org. Also in Arizona, and I don't know anyone who's been to Child's Camp Hot Springs out in Arizona, but it's on the Verde River, and a settlement recently protected the Verde River in Arizona. A federal judge has approved a settlement between six conservation groups and the U.S. Forest Service that will provide new protections to Arizona's Verde River. The settlement requires the USFS to step up its presence on the river and to complete a comprehensive management plan within 30 months. Conservation Coalition says the plan should have been prepared when a 40-mile stretch of the Verde was designated a National Wild and Scenic River 16 years ago. The public will see improved management right away, and the Forest Service has a reasonable amount of time to fulfill its obligation, said Matthew Bishop, an attorney for the Western Environmental Law Center, who represented the plaintiff organizations. By retaining jurisdiction, the court can hold the Forest Service accountable if they don't follow through. In settling the lawsuit, filed in October 2000 by the Western Environmental Law Center on behalf of the plaintiffs, the USFS acknowledged that it had violated the Wild and Scenic Rivers Act by failing to prepare a comprehensive management plan for Arizona's Verde Wild and Scenic River. The designated stretch of the Verde, Arizona's only national wild and scenic river, flows through the Tonto, Coconino, and Prescott National Forests. We've been concerned for over 20 years about irresponsible livestock grazing and unenforced regulations concerning recreational abusers and vandals, said Don Farmer, past president of the Arizona Wildlife Federation. Seems a shame that the lawsuit was necessary to get these three forests to work together to deal with these issues. In addition to the pledge to complete a joint management plan for the three forests, the USFS agreed to a number of interim steps to improve grazing practices along the river, such as repairing fences that control livestock's access to the river. The Forest Service will also send forest rangers down the river more often to spot problems and initiate corrective actions. Go Freddies. Now the real work begins, said Tim Flood, conservation coordinator for a group called Friends of Arizona Rivers. We're looking forward to a management plan that gives meaningful protection for the river's habitat and that determines how much water needs to remain in the river to support wildlife and recreational opportunities. And that seems like good news. And finally, this is a little shorter story, not quite so short, from the Arizona Republic, came out on September 14th. Regulators halt power plant near Arizona's Big Sandy. And this seems like a victory against power industry. Arizona utility regulators blocked a major power plant this week, the first denial among a host of new electricity generators planned to meet future energy needs. The Line Siting Committee of the Arizona Corporation Commission voted 8-1 to deny a certificate of environmental compatibility for the proposed Big Sandy power plant near Wikiup. Wikiup? It was the first such permit denied by the committee that in recent months has approved 10 others. The developers, Big Sandy Caithness, LLC, a New York-based energy firm, may appeal to the Arizona Corporation Commission, which has final say in the matter. Okay. A draft environmental impact study indicated the 720-megawatt power plant would have harmed the Big Sandy River, one of the state's few remaining riparian areas and home to the endangered southwestern willow flycatcher. While the power company proposed a mitigation plan to repair any environmental damage caused by the plant, Chairwoman-designee Lori Woodall said the committee was not convinced that it would be effective. They presented a hydrological study based on a limited amount of data and an incomplete assessment of the impact the loss of water in the Big Sandy would have on endangered species, she said. Woodall noted the 11-member committee is bound by Arizona's constitution to give special consideration to areas that provide habitat for threatened or endangered species. Quote, it was a judgment call on whether the mitigation measures really provide enough security, and the balance was tipped to the side of protecting the environment, she said. Jack Earhart, whose Citizens for Future Generations group opposed the plant, said he was elated by the committee's decision. The Big Sandy plant is one of more than 20 new merchant power plants proposed for the state of Arizona. The project drew organized opposition from citizens and environmental groups. And that sounds one blocked out of 10, 11 proposed, similar to the ongoing wave of new plants in California.
Yep. Well, and we move right here to Santa Cruz, California. The Ohlone tiger beetle has been listed as endangered. The Ohlone tiger beetle, a colorful insect that exists only in Santa Cruz County, California, is being listed as endangered under the Endangered Species Act. Researchers discovered the Ohlone tiger beetle in 1987. The species now exists in remnant stands of native grassland on coastal terraces in four small areas near or within the cities of Santa Cruz, Scotts Valley, and Soquel in Santa Cruz County. The beetles inhabit less than 20 acres on a combination of private lands and lands owned by the University of California at Santa Cruz, the City of Santa Cruz, and California State Parks. The tiger beetle inhabits some of the last remaining patches of a coastal prairie ecosystem that once spanned coastal Santa Cruz County and extended into San Mateo and Monterey counties, said Steve Thompson, acting director of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's California-Nevada Operations Office. We are already working with developers and land managers to plan for the conservation of this rare species. The final listing of the species was delayed when the U.S. Forest Service announced in November of last year that it would be unable to list any new species for fiscal year 2001 because most of its listing budget was being used to comply with court orders and settlement agreements requiring designation of critical habitat for species already listed under the Act. And I might add as a side note, they had underestimated their budget, so of course they blew it all out. Last month, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service announced an agreement with a variety of plaintiffs that would set up and free up funds to list the Ohlone tiger beetle and other species. The primary threat to the Ohlone tiger beetle here in Santa Cruz County is habitat destruction and fragmentation caused by urban development. Other threats include habitat changes caused by invasive plants, overcollection, impacts from recreational activities, pesticides, vulnerability to extinction from natural events such as disease, fire, drought, or flood. And I might add, in several timber sales being crushed by tractors and logging trucks. And a rare plant wins critical habitat protection. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has designated 6,135 acres of seasonal wetlands on state, federal, and private lands in central Washington as critical habitat for the endangered Wenatchee Mountains checker mallow. The checker mallow is an endangered plant native to the Wenatchee Mountains of Chelan County in central Washington. Most of the estimated 3,600 individual checker mallow plants in existence are found within about 95 acres of seasonal wetlands, wetlands that dry up in late summer and fall on the Washington Department of Natural Resources Camas Meadows Natural Area Preserve in Chelan County. Other checker mallow plants are scattered on adjacent U.S. Forest Service land and on a small parcel of private property in Pendleton Canyon. The designation of critical habitat for the Wenatchee Mountains checker mallow will help reduce the threats to this rare plant's wetland habitat, said Ann Badgley, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Pacific Regional Director. Our goal is to help this plant recover its numbers and increase its distribution so it can be removed from the endangered species list, and that would be a first, of course. The announcement is a result of a 1999 court settlement between the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the Center for Biological Diversity. In designating critical habitat for the Wenatchee Mountains checker mallow plant, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service was not able to map areas to a precise enough degree to exclude all structures such as houses, lawns, roads, and other developed areas. Developed sites within the boundaries that do not contain the basic elements essential for the conservation of the plant are not considered critical habitats.
I understand, ladies and gentlemen at home, that sometimes this news does bring the blues, but that just gets us more to stand up and get it right for our children.
Well, we had a couple of good ones there.
Yes, we do. We got a few more here. This next one is actually about the world's coastal reefs. They face total destruction within 50 years. This is by Tim Radford, the science editor of our London Guardian. Most of the coral reefs of the world's oceans will disappear within 30 to 50 years, a marine biologist warned. Rupert Ormond, director of the University Marine Biology Station at Millport in Scotland, told the British Association Science Festival in Glasgow that global warming would raise ocean temperatures to levels that would bleach the great reefs of the Pacific and Indian Oceans. Ouch. Corals are animals that live in symbiosis with light-fixing algae. Along with that, they colonize swallow coasts and their bones form the limestone platforms that form atolls, enclosed lagoons, and protect shorelines. They also become habitats for some of the richest collections of creatures on the planet. 10 years ago, the greatest threat to reefs were pollution from rivers and eruptions of coral-eating starfish. There are now 13,000 marine parks managing the impacts of tourism and overfishing, Dr. Ormond said. But corals are sensitive to changes in sea temperature. In 1998, at the height of the sudden natural surge in temperature in El Nino, as much as 90% of the coral in the tropical Indian Ocean was killed by bleaching. The whitening and then death of corals began to be known in a few areas in the early 80s. I became involved in 97 to 98 when there's extreme widespread coral bleaching around all the oceans in the tropics, he quoted. More than 60 countries experienced coral bleaching. The latest evidence shows overwhelmingly that the bleaching was due to a steady, almost inevitable rise in ocean temperatures, now climbing at a rate of 1 to 2 degrees centigrade every 100 years. It doesn't seem like that much, but creatures that have been there for billions of years, it affects them a lot. It explains why, to begin with, we only saw these events in El Nino years, when the ocean temperatures tend to be the warmest. Within 10 to 20 years, we will get massive bleaching on a wide scale almost every single year, one can predict. Looking at those figures, that maybe within 50 years, there will be very little left of corals in coral reef countries all over the whole world. Frankly, I find the whole prognosis extremely gloomy.
I cannot see what can be done. Given that there is something like a 50-year time lag between us trying to control carbon dioxide emissions and the temperatures of oceans beginning to drop, he said. Reefs are not just attractive places to visit and fun to dive on. They are seen as critical service providers in four main areas: fisheries, tourism, biodiversity, and coastal protection. And just as an example, it is reckoned that some 100 million a year is spent by the people in the wider Caribbean. In Egypt, where I do a lot of my work, there are 2 million tourists a year visiting marine national parks that have been reefs. NASA researchers, once again, said the growing season in Europe and Asia was now 18 days longer than two decades ago. Evidence from satellites shows trees that were growing into leaf a week earlier in spring, and autumn was arriving 10 days earlier. Another story here, good to help us out. A judge bars two timber sales in Jefferson National Forest. A judge has issued a permanent injunction against two timber sales in Jefferson National Forest due to the United States Forest Service's USFS failure to consider alternatives to logging. The original lawsuit challenging the Cuba and Taylor Branch timber sales on the Newcastle Ranger District was filed by the Southern Appalachian Biodiversity Project, that's SABP. In 1999, Judge Marvin Shrub declared the sales null and void and ordered the USFS, United States Forest Service, to consider a reasonable range of alternatives in preparing new environmental assessments for the timber sales. These sales proposed cutting 120 acres and constructing 1.3 miles of road. The United States Forest Service issued new environmental assessments, that those are EAs, for each sale, which rubber-stamped the prior approval of the sales. This injected bias in the entire EAs amounted to a post hoc realization of defendants' preference for moving forward with the sales, said the federal court in Atlanta. Analyzing alternatives to this timber sale would be a simple exercise, says Tracy Davids, executive director of SABP. Unfortunately, the Forest Service has shown again and again that timber sales are more important than complying with environmental laws that protect values we all hold so dear: clean water, healthy forests, and solitude. Therefore, we continue to call on Forest Service to end their commerce timber sales program. That was Tracy Davids. Last month, the National Forest Protection Alliance issued a report on the nation's 10 most endangered forests, identifying George Washington and Jefferson National Forest Complex in Virginia as endangered by industrial logging, air pollution, and water pollution. Information on forests was accumulated from more than 40 grassroots forest activist organizations. And that's a win for us on the judge barring two timber sales. What do you got there, Dennis?
Big Basin needs you. Big Basin was the first California state park, so listen up here. Big Basin Redwood State Park is one of the most crucial refuges for natural biodiversity in our bioregion. Consequently, the content of the Big Basin General Plan is now being prepared, is of interest to everyone who is committed to the conservation of our native flora and fauna. If we want a plan that provides adequate protection to the park's extraordinary biological diversity, we need to make those comments now and in large numbers. I'm urging everyone to send written comments to California State Parks, Robin Ettinger, Ettinger, Northern Service Center, P.O. Box 942-896. That's P.O. Box 942-896, Sacramento, California, 94296-0001. Once again, that whole address, California State Parks, Robin Ettinger, Northern Service Center, P.O. Box 942-896, Sacramento, California, 94296-0001. If you want information about the planning process, you can find that by going to the State Parks website, www.parks.ca.gov. That's www.parks.ca.gov. And click on Find a Park, select Big Basin Redwoods, click Go, and then click on General Plan Information. Well, I'm afraid that's all the time we have for news. If you want to get news or announcements from your bioregion to Earth First Radio, send us email at cruzeef@cruzeio.com. That's cruzeef@cruzeio.com, cruzeef@cruzeio.com. Or you can send letters to Earth First Radio. The address is Post Office Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Once again, that's Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Be sure to send any and all announcements at least 3 weeks in advance so we can get them on the air in time for your event. If you want more in-depth news and information about the Earth First Movement, please subscribe to the Earth First Journal. Their address, P.O. Box 3023, Tucson, Arizona, 85702. That's the Earth First Journal, P.O. Box 3023, Tucson, Arizona, 85702. You can listen to Earth First Radio live on your computer every Thursday night at 8 p.m. Pacific Time. Go to the website www.microradio.net/FRSC. That's www.microradio.net/FRSC. And there's lots of great shows on Free Radio Santa Cruz anytime, so tune in. You can always find Earth First Radio archive shows on the World Wide Web at www.radioforall.net. That's www.radio4all.net. And search for Earth First Radio. We're also available at la.indymedia.org. This is show number 161. Earth First Radio is carried on a growing number of free speech and non-commercial radio stations. Ask your local station to rebroadcast Earth First Radio. Earth First Radio is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, and I'd like to thank Jason and Blackbird for help tonight.
All right.
Your theme music was written by and performed by Daryl Cherney off the CD Keep It Wild. I'm Uncle Dennis, and I want to thank you for listening to Earth First Radio. And now we're going to listen to John Seed and Dana Lyons talking about that habitat.
Here's a tune by Bill Oliver, our friend from Austin, Texas.
Habitat, a very special habitat. It's where the tallest trees are at. It's where a bear can scratch your back. Keeps the ground from rolling back. Keeps the oxygen intact. The forest is a habitat that we depend on.
Habitat, 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 have to have a habitat. Habitat, habitat, have to have a habitat. Have to have a habitat to carry on.
Is a habitat, a very special habitat. It's where the deepest water's at. It's where the biggest mammal's at. It's where our future food is at. Keeps the atmosphere intact. The ocean is a habitat that we depend on. Let's hear it now.
Habitat.
Water's at where people fish and muskrat. But when the people dunk their trash, the rivers take the biggest rat. River is a habitat that we depend on.
Habitat, 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 habitat.
Habits affect the whole world with their bad habits. Better to love it while we still have it. A rat-a-tat-tat, our habitat's gone.
Habitat, habitat, have to have a habitat. Habitat.
You have to have a habitat to carry on. Real loud now, you have to have a habitat.